This week on Vaticano, Pope Francis addresses the mayor of Rome and the city's administration on Capitoline Hill, known locally as the Campidoglio, as the city prepares for the 2025 Jubilee. We delve into the church's economic teachings and attend a Vatican-hosted religious freedom conference in Rome. Finally, we conclude our series on the Pontifical Swiss Guard. For this and more, Vaticano starts now.
I come to meet you, and through you, the entire city, which almost since its birth, about 2,800 years ago, has had a clear and constant vocation of universality.
Pope Francis crossed the Tiber River on June the 10th to visit the Capitoline Assembly, invited by Rome's mayor in preparation for the 2025 Jubilee year. After being heralded by trumpets at Capitoline Square, the Pope delivered his speech in the Hall of Flags. Before the ceremony, he and Mayor Roberto Gualtieri signed the Book of Honor and exchanged gifts. In his address, Pope Francis expressed gratitude for the collaboration between the Holy See and the municipality, and praised the city's preparations for pilgrims. He announced his intention to open a holy door in one of Rome's prisons during the Jubilee year.
Rome is a city with a universal spirit. This spirit aims to serve charity, hospitality, and welcome. Pilgrims, tourists, migrants, those in great difficulty, the poorest, the lonely, the sick, prisoners, the excluded, these should be the true witnesses of the Spirit. For this reason, I decided to open a holy door in a prison.
Pope Francis concluded by encouraging Rome to continue showcasing its welcoming and noble character. He called for strengthened cooperation among governing bodies to honor the city's providential role, and expressed his devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary, Salus Populi Romani.
Grazie per quello che fate per la città. Non dimenticatevi di pregare per me. Grazie.
How much blood has been shed? How many lives have been shattered? How many hopes have been buried? But our efforts have been in vain. Now, Lord, come to our aid.
Pope Francis has once again issued an urgent appeal for peace in the Holy Land. During a ceremony in the Vatican Gardens, the Holy Father watered an olive tree, symbolizing the Holy See's decades-long commitment to peace efforts. The event was attended by numerous cardinals, as well as the Israeli ambassador to the Holy See, Raphael Schutz, and the Palestinian ambassador to the Holy See, Issa Cassisie.
I think of how urgent it is that from the rubble of Gaza, a decision to stop the weapons will finally arise. And therefore, I ask that there be a ceasefire. I think of the families and of the Israeli hostages and ask that they be released as soon as possible. I think of the Palestinian population and ask that they be protected and receive all necessary humanitarian aid.
The Pope also reiterated his call for a ceasefire and urged the terrorists to release the remaining hostages. This olive tree holds special significance. It was planted 10 years ago, on June 8, 2014, by Pope Francis alongside the then President of Israel, Shimon Peres, and the Palestinian leader, Mahmoud Abbas, in the Vatican Gardens.
Let us ask the Lord that the leaders of nations and the parties in conflict may find the way to peace and unity. May we all recognize each other as brothers and sisters.
Although peace in the Holy Land seems distant, Pope Francis remains hopeful. The olive tree serves as a fitting symbol for his peace efforts, as these trees often take more than 10 years to bear fruit.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. A universal and immediate language, that is how Pope Francis described music while praising Catholic choirs and members of the choirs of all ages. Speaking to parish and diocesan groups, scholar cantorum, directors and musicians, he highlighted how music creates harmony, beauty and poetry which reflects God's light. Around 300 singers and 80 musicians took part in the fourth international meeting of choirs at the Vatican. Pope Francis announced he will prepare a reflection on the Sacred Heart of Jesus for a world that seems to have lost its heart. He plans to publish the document in September, noting that the Church dedicates June to the Sacred Heart. He also appealed for prayers to Mary for world peace. The pro-life Italian association Pro Vita and Familia reported another attack on its Rome headquarters. On June 6th, a female protester accompanied by an ANSA cameraman and a leftist European Parliament candidate tried to plaster a pro-abortion poster on the building. This is the 13th act of vandalism against Pro Vita e Familia in under 3 years and the third in just over a month. Around 20 theologians are working on the Instrumentum Laboris for the second session of the Synod of Bishops. This document will guide the Synod's work in October and is expected to be published in July. In a meeting with ambassadors from Ethiopia, Zambia, Tanzania, Burundi, Qatar, and Mauritania, Pope Francis encouraged them to build a culture of fraternal solidarity and cooperation. He lamented that the nations are being torn apart by violence and expressed hope that diplomats will always strive to be peacemakers. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Andreas Thornhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll explore the connection between faith and finance, as well as the Church's teachings on the economy.
The way in which Pope Francis is challenging the capitalist system is by saying we should create more encounter. He's not anti-capitalist, he's post-capitalist.
Faith and finance, wealth and poverty, the hustle and bustle of the market, the quiet retreat found in a monastery. At a quick glance, faith and finance can seem to be diametrically opposed. But what does the Church actually teach about the economy? And what is Pope Francis calling on all of us to do?
These happens today. If the investments in the bank fall slightly, a tragedy, what can be done? But if people die of hunger, if they have nothing to eat, if they have poor health, it does not matter. This is our crisis today.
In his Vigil of Pentecost address, Pope Francis highlighted modern society's skewed priorities, contrasting concern for financial markets with indifference to human trafficking. This raises a critical question. Is the gospel's call to care for the impoverished inherently at odds with our economic systems? The Italian economist Salvatore Rebecchini offers a perspective that bridges this apparent divide.
I always keep in mind the extraordinary teaching of Centesimus Annus regarding the criteria that should animate a society in pursuing economic goals, as recalled by St. John Paul II. He defines the model as a market economy, a free economy, an open economy. It is the best model that can be proposed to the world.
Various encyclicals and church documents offer economic guidance to the faithful. A key document is Centesimus Annus, written by Pope John Paul II in 1991, marking the centenary of Pope Leo XIII's Rerum Novarum. It connects Jesus' teaching to the industrial age, examining Cold War-era issues and still influencing economists today.
The gospel.
Father Christian Mendoza, a professor of economics at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome, elaborates on this historical interplay between faith and economics.
All along church history, we see the power of this great Christian call of detachment. What we have doesn't belong to us. We use it in the name of God. So Pietro de Olivi, one of the greatest Franciscans, he created this accounting system.
In the encyclical, Pope Francis calls on the state to ensure justice for the poor and protect the human rights of all citizens. He emphasizes the important role of the economy in this context.
St. Francis.
Michael Severance, director of the Acton Institute's Rome office, which promotes free market principles and religious liberty, reflects on this perspective.
The creative call of Pope Francis, and from the very beginning of St. Francis himself, to have an economy that cares. And having an economy that cares allows us to dig deep into our hearts and ask what is God's will for the economy, the will for the poor, but above all, what is will for us within our natural capacities and in our creative capacities.
Throughout the centuries, the Church has made calls to create a more humane society. In 2020, Pope Francis signed his encyclical Fratelli Tutti during a visit to Assisi. The document calls for a new kind of politics that rejects radical individualism and promotes the common good. Amid the global pandemic, the 87-year-old Pope uses the gospel story of the Good Samaritan and St. Francis of Assisi as guides for this vision.
I think what the economy, a global economy, is dipping down into is basically what it fell short of during the pandemic in terms of its isolation. You have people working more for themselves, not with the company and not for the company, but for their own salary, their own gain. The church itself has always been very concerned about humanity as a social project. We can only get to heaven, we can only save ourselves through helping each other.
$4.9 billion people live in countries with serious or very serious violations of religious freedom.
Here, the neutrality of the public apparatus in relation to the free choice of citizens in religious matters is replaced by an ideology intolerant of other beliefs, which are consequently marginalized to the point of disappearing from the public aggregate.
The Vatican's foreign minister, Archbishop Paul Gallagher, called for a new global platform for religious freedom at a conference in Rome hosted by the Order of Malta. He stressed that if the international community ignores the spiritual side of the human person, its concept of human development is incomplete.
The defense of religious freedom can be understood as the defense of the truth of the human person in the face of constraints that might be imposed by fundamentalist religious groups or totalitarian states.
Almost 10 years ago, the UN adopted the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. It's meant to be the world's roadmap for ending poverty, protecting the planet, and tackling inequalities. The agenda defined 17 goals, but the speakers are advocating for the right to religious freedom to be included.
Enough is never enough. enough. It's clear that it's not enough, taken into consideration, even though it's a part of a very lively debate, very often debated in all international fora.
Last summer, the Atlantic Council's Freedom and Prosperity Center unveiled indices that measure the freedom and prosperity, respectively, of nearly every country in the world. For the first time in decades, both are currently in decline.
Religious freedom is, we believe, more than a human right. It's not more than a good in itself. It is part of what governments need to put in place to create a society that can thrive and become prosperous. And the numbers that we have in our data, Atlantic Council Freedom and Prosperity Indexes, show that religious freedom is at the lowest in 30 years.
Experts went on to explain that freedom and prosperity are incredibly correlated. The freer a country, the more prosperous. The less free, the less prosperous. For this reason, they hope more countries, governments, and voting populations will make use of the data to make better policy decisions for their people.
That the hope is that countries and governments who look at this data will see clues as to what they might, levers they may pull to increase freedom and ultimately increase prosperity for their people.
We'll be back after a short break with part four of our series on the Pontifical Swiss Guards. Ceremony of the Pontifical Swiss Guards served as a great moment of anticipation for the community around Vatican City. Various figureheads such as bishops, cardinals, political representatives from Switzerland, and ambassadors from various countries to the Holy See were visibly in attendance. Great in number and drawing attention during the evening ceremony were also friends and family of the guards.
Parents, brothers and sisters, are the most important people of reference. They offer the young guards the necessary support through prayer. This is very important because they are spending an extended period abroad for the first time with such a responsibility-laden task.
Some of the fathers and brothers in the crowd are current or former guardsmen themselves. During an earlier meeting with the press, some guards and family members shared their thoughts and emotions.
It's been 32 years since you entered the guard. Is your heart still beating?
The oath for me is one of the most important days of the year, almost more than my birthday, because it is connected to a memory of friendship. But I must say, it's beautiful then to have now here my son always still active. It is an honor. A pride, there are no words.
While for some the oath is already familiar, for many others it is incredibly novel, as these new recruits are the first in their families to serve the Holy Father.
I am the first, and it is a great honor to make this entrance to the family. I've been able to join the Swiss Army and other armies as well, but I think coming to this army is the best thing that could have happened to me. They, my family, reacted very positively. They were really very proud that I made such a decision, and we were of course delighted that you could be there today. And your friends too? My guess is that they're the same age. At first, they thought I was joking with them about what I said about joining the Swiss Guard. But then, when I explained what I meant, they understood. Last year, when my brother joined, my brother is also in the guard, and that was like a motivational boost. So I said to myself, come on, I'll sign up too. And then the whole thing took off. The whole registration process started there. So it's really nice to still have a piece of home here.
Service in the guard lasts at least 2 years. Afterwards, while quite a number of them renew for extended service, many use this experience to build a foundation for their future. A Alabardiere Luca Titus, who is finishing up his service, recently proposed to his fiancée, Zoe.
We went to Mass together at our chapel, and then we went to the gardens, and I proposed to her in front of a nice fountain up in the gardens. We've called each other every day for 2 years. There are exceptions, but almost every day. And she was able to come pretty often to see me, so that was a blessing. So we will get married back home in Switzerland, near Lake Geneva. We found a beautiful neo-Gothic church next to the water.
Luca's current post before completing his service involves standing guard outside Pope Francis's room. Going forward, he plans to continually remember this as a great honor.
We are in service in front of his room 24 hours a day, and sometimes he will come out in the morning and we get to greet him, and so we are the first persons he sees in the morning. And what touched me was always his great kindness, his attention to us. I still realize that it is very special to be here and that I have to be grateful for it.
I would like to extend great thanks to the Holy Father, Pope Francis, to our superiors in the Secretariat of State. Their great trust and benevolent support honor us and spur us on in the fulfillment of our duty. Dear guards, I thank you wholeheartedly for this choice and congratulate you on today's oath.
Up!